I was just thinking about how I haven't done a legitimate intro for the show in months, I think, at this point. So let's go ahead. Let's try this on for size.
Folks, thank you so much for coming to check out the latest episode of the Hedging Screens podcast. As always, I am your host, Zach Cronin, and I am eternally grateful that you would choose to spend some time with me today.
All right, that's enough of that. That was fucking... That might have been... Yeah, it was probably super cringe. Anyway, how's everybody doing today? Are we doing well? Doing good? We doing bad? Hope everybody is just out there living their best lives, man. Summer is coming to an end, and if you live in New York State, you know that means one thing. It means that for the next couple of weeks, it's going to be the worst time of the year to live in the state of New York. It's going to be like 100,000 degrees, 1,000,000% humidity, and I'm going to want to fucking pull all of my skin off and just leave it. Leave it literally anywhere. Just spend all day inside in the air conditioning. But enough with that. Last week, I got terrible memory. I forgot everything I talked about last week. But one thing I didn't cover was probably arguably the biggest story that was ran last week. So this was as of like last Friday, you know, the 19th to 20th type shit. It came out that LeBron James was not voted as the NBA's best player in an offseason survey. I don't know why my brain just stopped working like that. But it was that he didn't even receive a single vote as the NBA's best player, which kind of threw a lot of people for a loop, him included. He took to Twitter, thanking all the haters and just trying to proclaim how he isn't washed. And the consensus was that obviously LeBron James is not washed. This dude is going to be 37 years old and he's coming off a season where he averaged like 25 points, 7 rebounds, and damn near 8 assists. But this, I thought, was the annual GM survey that the NBA does, that they publish on NBA.com, and that the league actually runs. It's like, okay, who do you think is going to be the champion? Who's the best player at each position? Who do you think is going to win MVP? Who do you think is the best player in the NBA, the best shooter, the best ball handler, stuff like that? It's a very comprehensive survey that usually comes out around 2 weeks before the beginning of the season. I know last season, 2020-21, they published it on like December 10th or something, which is almost exactly 2 weeks before the beginning of the season. This, however, I have a reason to believe that this is something entirely different. This was published by ESPN, and it was written by Tim Bontemps. And it says here that's they were talking about fucking summer league and shit like that. Now that last season is in the books, what will next season bring? Here's what a panel of 10 NBA scouts and executives had to say about what transpired over the past few weeks and what it'll mean for the 2021-22 campaign. Now, right away, there's only 10 people voting on this poll. I don't know how many GMs vote on the GM poll every year, but I would assume that it's close to 30. And I can't remember off the top of my head, but I don't believe the GMs are allowed to vote for anyone on their team. So John Marks, for example, would not be able to pick Kevin Durant as the NBA's best player. What the fuck is his name? John Horst? I think John Horst is the GM for the Milwaukee Bucks. He's not allowed to vote for Giannis as the NBA's best player. The Heat wouldn't be able to pick themselves to be the NBA champions. I don't know what any of this is. I don't know if any of it is relevant to this survey. I don't know if there are any stipulations, but we're going to fucking get right into it. The first question, the hardest hitter: who is the best player in the NBA heading into the 2021-22 season? Giannis and Kevin Durant both got 5 votes apiece, which is not entirely surprising. I just want to read the blurb here. I'm doing this blind, by the way. This is a semi-blind reaction. So I'm just going to take the quotes of these respective individuals. People love to focus on his faults, but he's a hell of a player. This is what one Eastern Conference exec said of Giannis. There was another one who said he's unlocked a different cheat code at both ends that gives him that spot. You can certainly argue for Durant and LeBron, but between injury and age, can they consistently do it? There was another one. Quote, I think he's the best scorer in the league. I don't think it's close, and he's pretty good defensively too, said a Western Conference scout about Kevin Durant. The things he's able to do offensively are generational, and I don't know if you can stop him. He's absolutely lethal. Another scout, this one from an Eastern Conference team, said a healthy Durant gives more on both ends than anybody else. Health is a big if going forward, but his combination of scoring and defense is tough to bear. So I'm not surprised that LeBron wasn't picked as the league's best player. LeBron has pretty much unanimously been the best player in the NBA for the last 12 years or so, I'd say since around like 2009, 2010-ish. Ever since then, pretty much everyone has been in agreement that there is nobody better in the NBA than LeBron James. There have been instances where guys have had better seasons than LeBron. You look at Steph when he won his MVP in 2015, 2016. One of the all-time greatest seasons that any NBA player has ever had. And he was a more dominant player than LeBron James that season. But in a conversation like this, a lot of it comes down to the skill set of the individual players. And I don't know if you guys can hear this, but there is some yard work going on in my neighbor's backyard. They are cutting down a fucking tree because every time there is some sort of fucking tropical storm or hurricane or something, always someone's fucking tree falls down. And I think that's a big reason why we got rid of all the trees in our backyard, all the big trees at least, and put in a bunch of little ones. But if you guys hear the chainsaws going, I apologize. Anyway, let's get back into it. So the best player conversation is always kind of weird because it is this intricate dance of skill set, availability, of course, is a huge one, and just the numbers that these guys can put up. Now, I think that LeBron, KD, and Giannis are the top tier of NBA talent at this point. They are the S tier. I would also consider throwing Steph Curry in there. I would also consider throwing Nikola Jokic in there. But I think we're pretty much in agreement that Giannis, KD, and LeBron are pretty well separated beyond everybody else. Like, these guys have the fewest concerns when it comes to their game. Statistically, they all match up pretty well to one another. KD just came off averaging like 27.7 rebounds and almost 6 assists. Giannis at almost like 28 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, something like that. What is it actually? 28 points, 11 boards, and 6 assists. Without a doubt, to me, Giannis is the most dominant player in the NBA right now, meaning that he's going to put up these numbers pretty much with his eyes closed. Kevin Durant can do the same, LeBron can do the same, but they don't compare to Giannis in terms of overall efficiency and just overall. I think the intimidation factor for Giannis is another thing as well. Like, when he decides to take it to another level, it's a wrap. It is very similar to what LeBron did and what Kevin Durant did in their younger years. LeBron was with Miami. When he wanted to take it to the greatest of all time level, it was a wrap for everybody. What he did against the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference semifinals in 2012. Very similar to what Giannis did it all throughout the playoffs this past season. Just physically dominating everybody on both ends of the floor. As a scorer, as a rebounder, as an interior defender, as a playmaker. Sometimes, I don't think anyone's going to argue Giannis being the most dominant. When it gets into the weeds, particularly with Giannis, is that his skill set does not compare to Kevin Durant or LeBron. And Kevin Durant and LeBron are also very different in their own regards. LeBron cannot touch Kevin Durant in terms of scoring. While statistically they are very similar, Kevin Durant has a skill set that nobody in NBA history has ever matched and that nobody in NBA history will ever. 7 feet tall, an 8-foot wingspan, dribbles as well as Steph Curry, as well as Kyrie Irving, and then is as sharp a shooter Reggie Miller, Kyle Korver, J.J. Redick. The ability to be a catch-and-shoot three-pointer, to be a catch-and-shoot guy, to take defenders off the dribble, to really just be a menace from anywhere on the court. It's not just generational. It's like once in a lifetime, once in forever, I feel like. the more I watch Kevin Durant, the more I realize that he's one of one. He is a LeBron James. He is a Michael Jordan. He is a Kareem. He's a Magic Johnson. There will never be another one of those guys. People will come close. People will definitely come close. I mean, Kobe Bryant is not Michael Jordan, but he's the closest that anyone has ever gotten to being Michael Jordan. You can even say the same about Kawhi Leonard to Michael Jordan. And then we see guys like James Harden, like Luka Doncic, who are able to match LeBron's level of versatility, but he's still just on a completely different level compared to them. And I don't know who I would pick in this scenario. I do feel a little bit biased because I am a Brooklyn Nets fan. I do love Kevin Durant a lot more now that he's on my team, that I get to root for him however many games that he's held before. I had always appreciated his game, but I think, like, I've never been in this position before. I've never had, like, an all-time great player to root for. I do think I look at things a little bit differently now. Like, I'm not so sure I would be considering Kevin Durant as the best player in the NBA. I don't think I'd have such strong convictions about it if he wasn't a Brooklyn Net. I would definitely include him in the conversation, but I don't think I would steer so close to him. I think I'd probably wind up going with LeBron because he's been the greatest player that I've ever seen. And for pretty much like almost all of my adult life, he's been the guy who he's been the most reliable option in the NBA almost. But it's difficult to pick. Like, I wouldn't want to be one of the guys that had to pick who the best player in the NBA is right now, because I wouldn't be able to. Even now, sitting in front of this camera, talking into this microphone, I'm not able to focus in on one guy because all of their cases are just immaculate. If the only thing at this point is age and injury concern, LeBron having age and injury concerns, Kevin Durant having injury concerns, and also, you know, age will be a bit of a factor in the coming years. Except I don't think age impacts Kevin Durant as it does some other players at his position, because as we've seen, the Achilles injury, one of the worst injuries an athlete can suffer, really didn't do anything to his game. He comes back and has the best season of his career. Like, his game has always been predicated on skill set, and he's been able to really improve so deep into his career because he's never had to make a switch. LeBron had to make a little bit of a switch at some point. I mean, he's still a freak athlete, especially for his age, but, you know, we've seen it. He has taken a bit of a step back when it comes to his assertiveness as a scorer, when it comes to him just being able to fly by everybody on the perimeter for 36, 38, 40, 42 minutes. He has to pick and choose his spots a lot more. Of course, he's still wickedly effective on offense, and that's not going to change. I mean, he's improved his three-point shot, so having to shift hasn't really done anything for him. But how much longer will that be able to continue? Of course, the long-term conversation in this regard doesn't matter because we're talking about him for next year. And I don't think LeBron is going to fall off drastically unless he gets riddled with injuries, kind of like how Kobe was at the end of his career. Like, if you're not able to walk, you're not able to put up numbers. Now, Giannis, of course, does have the availability factor. As people always say, the best ability is availability. And Giannis is super durable. Played 61 of 72 games last season, or this past season. Played 63 games the year before during the COVID truncation. 72, 75, 80, 80, 81. Like, this guy is a workhorse. And I think a lot of it is because he doesn't have to play so many minutes. I mean, he played 33 minutes this past season, which was the highest he's played since 2017, 2018. LeBron and Kevin Durant did play a lot of minutes early on in their career, as did Giannis, especially like his third and fourth seasons. He did play a considerable amount of minutes, but the Bucks have just become so fucking dominant that they don't have to play in the fourth quarter. Like, Giannis, Chris Middleton, they don't have to play the final 8, 10, 12 minutes of a ball game. And they can do this against bad teams. They can do it against good teams. Like, that's a luxury you have when you're the most dominant team in the NBA. But in terms of trying to, again, pinpoint who the best player in the NBA is at this point, I don't know. I don't know if you can do it. Like, I don't feel right picking one of these three guys. I mean, if you really twist my arm, I'm going to say Kevin Durant because I'm inherently biased. Like, I don't think I can overcome these biases. But then I say that, and then I think about what Giannis has done throughout the last regular season, all throughout the postseason. Like, it's hard to go against Giannis. It really is. It's incredibly hard to go against Giannis. And then, of course, I mentioned him at the top of the segment, but Nikola Jokic, this guy is coming off an MVP campaign and didn't get a single vote. Like, I think it's very disrespectful for everyone in this poll to have voted for either Kevin Durant or Giannis. Like, obviously they deserve it, but Steph Curry deserved a vote. Nikola Jokic deserved a vote. LeBron James deserved a vote. Like, I'm not surprised that these two guys earned a majority of the votes, but I am surprised that they were the only guys who earned votes. I mean, again, if we want to talk about just statistical dominance, Nikola Jokic won an MVP averaging similar numbers to Giannis. Well, no, that's actually factually incorrect. He was still scoring, what was it, like 22, 23, 24 points a night. Let me double check this. Let me not look like a dickhead live on air. Let me actually get these numbers. 26 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists. Shooting 57% from the field, 39% from 3, and 87% from the line. You're going to tell me that this guy doesn't have a case to be the best player in the NBA? He does. Obviously, just winning the MVP. He is technically the best player in the NBA. Of course, that argument is kind of flawed because Giannis won Finals MVP, which means he was the best player on the best team in the NBA. So again, this conversation, it gets into the weeds very quickly. But again, I'm just more concerned about the disparity of the votes or the lack thereof, or the lack of disparity. No, I don't know. I'm overall just very confused that these guys, KD and Giannis, were the only ones who earned votes. I mean, now, like, I don't know who I should pick for this. And I hope no one came here hoping for me to give them an answer, because you guys are going to be very, very disappointed. I can already tell you that. Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's peruse the rest of this list. The best moves of the offseason in, this is in 1 to 5. I guess Kyle Lowry to Miami, Jalen Suggs to Orlando. That was, of course, via the draft. The Wizards trading Russell Westbrook. The Chicago Bulls offseason. And Patty Mills to the Brooklyn Nets. I don't see an issue with anything on here as the chainsaws begin to rev up again. I don't see an issue with any of these choices. I do find it funny that nobody who voted thought that the Lakers acquiring Russell Westbrook was arguably the best move of the offseason, because it doesn't say that explicitly. It says the Wizards trading Russell Westbrook, which when I read it that way, and I totally could just be misinterpreting it, but that leads me to believe that the Wizards offloading Russ was the best move of the offseason, which I don't find to be true at all. I mean, in terms of, you know, offloading a massive contract, being able to bring in somebody like Spencer Dinwiddie, thanks to all of the free space, I would not put that on there. Kyle Lowry to Miami, to me, was in the conversation to be the best move of the offseason, but I still think that the Bulls cleaned up, man. They had a fantastic free agency period, getting Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, keeping Zach LaVine, although I don't think there was any concerns about him. I mean, there were concerns about him being traded, but I don't know how factual they were. Obviously it was all speculation, but I don't know if they ever really gained any traction. I know I'm forgetting somebody, and I apologize to whoever I forgot, but bringing in Lonzo, bringing in DeMar DeRozan, killer offseason for Chicago. That's who I would go with. I do think Lowry brings a lot to Miami, just in terms of defense, three-point shooting, especially with them getting rid of Dragic. they needed someone to be a legitimate playmaker. And fortunately, they were able to get Kyle Lowry, who is one of the best in the business, a guy who Bam and JB can feed off of. Again, someone who can keep the floor spaced, someone who can actually D up the best perimeter, not the best perimeter player, but the best opposing guard on the other team. Because although Dragic was giving you, you know, 20 points and 6 rebounds a night, he was not a positive on defense, at least as far as I can tell. If you have numbers that say differently, send them my way. But Dragic has never had the reputation of being a lockdown defender. So what do we got next? Holy shit. The worst move of the offseason, tied for number one, DeMar DeRozan to the Chicago Bulls. What the fuck? These guys are smoking dick. This is offensive, actually. DeMar to Chicago, 3 votes. The Pelicans offseason. The Pelicans offseason fucking sucked. That deserves to be the number one spot. They lost Lonzo Ball. That's for one. They traded Eric Bledsoe to Memphis. They got absolutely fucked over in that trade with Memphis. Westbrook to the Lakers. This is interesting. This is an interesting one. Because I too was under the assumption that Russell Westbrook going to Los Angeles was a horrible deal on its surface. And the reason why I thought that was because the Lakers parted with Trez, Kuz, and KCP. Mostly Montrez and KCP. Kuzma, as solid of a role player as he is very inconsistent. That's pretty much been his brand all throughout his 4-year run in the NBA. Like this past season, he just got done shooting 37% from the 3-point line. Could have nights where he goes, gets 18, 20, 22 points, but then, you know, a couple nights in a row after that, it's like 5 points, 11 points, 10 points, whatever. Russell Westbrook does not satisfy any of the roles that were leaving the Lakers. KCP is a 3 and D guy. Shoots between 38 and 40% from 3. Sorry, I'm freaking out because there is just so much fucking noise happening. Dogs are barking. The chainsaw is going. There is so much shit going on right now. And I apologize to everybody who is listening. I am just as fucking irate as you are right now. But I'm going to keep my composure and get back to why the Lakers trading Russell Westbrook was not as bad as initially thought. Although they lost KCP and they lost Trez, as I was just saying, KCP is a very reliable 3 and D guy. Trez, great defender, high energy. They did bring in some guys to lessen the blow. Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn, starters. Well, not starters, but like, you know, catalysts off the bench on offense. It was Alex Caruso. That was who the Bulls also signed. So again, now even more so, I think the Bulls had the best offseason. Far better. Their whole entire offseason, it was better than everybody else's. I apologize. As good as the Brooklyn Nets were, I still think Chicago had a better offseason. If Brooklyn didn't re-sign Kevin Durant, which is strangely not, that got no love in this poll. Very surprising. I still think Chicago had a better offseason. But trading Russ to the Lakers, or the Lakers trading for Russ, to me was made a lot better upon them signing everyone that they signed. Carmelo, re-signing Dwight Howard, Wayne Ellington, Trevor Ariza, Kendrick Nunn. Who else? I just fucking said it. Kendrick Nunn, and who else? Malik Monk. They filled the holes that they lost. To the same degree? No. But I don't think they are significantly worse off than they were last season. And then, of course, you have LeBron and you have Anthony Davis, who are, God willing, going to be fully healthy. Next, Doug McDermott to the San Antonio Spurs. I don't understand how this is even on here. Like, this one vote that this fucking deal got should have gone to Brooklyn not re-signing Jeff Green. Because that was, I'm going to miss Uncle Jeff so much. But that's a moot point. It's very clearly New Orleans. This should have been unanimous. All 10 of these voters should have looked at the Pelicans offseason and been like, oh yeah, it was fucking dog shit. Anyway, Moving on. The most surprising move of the offseason. Dennis Schroeder to the Boston Celtics. Kemba's buyout signing with the Knicks. The Blazers offseason. The Mavs offseason. Patty Mills to Brooklyn. Russ to the Lakers. Chris Paul re-signing with Phoenix. This is the... I'm not surprised that this has like eight different options. Dennis Schroeder, more so signing with the Celtics, going from passing up, what was it, $84 million. He claimed that he was going to get, well, not that he was going to get, but he wanted upwards of nine figures, $100 million. He got roasted on the internet for that, declined an $84 million extension, and then wound up signing for like the taxpayer exemption or something with the Celtics. That was very surprising. For me, I'm stuck between Chris Paul re-signing with Phoenix and Kemba signing with the Knicks. I was not expecting Kemba to be in Oklahoma City and then get bought out there and sign in New York. That really took me for a loop, honestly. Like, above anything else, the Knicks just being able to get a quality player this early in their rebuild. Like, I know they had a fantastic season last season, and I'm not trying to put them down for that, but I thought that them signing Fournier was, you know, the icing on the cake. They re-signed Derrick Rose. They re-signed Evan Fournier. They keep pretty much the entire team together. And not only that, they add something to the team's offense in terms of a backcourt creator, because RJ Barrett is not at that point yet. And it's uncertain if he is ever going to fully mature into the super versatile playmaker that everybody thought. He's still young. He can still do it. He's got a couple more years until he reaches his prime and probably his development gets stunted. But I mean, after seeing Julius Randle's turnaround at 27, 26 years old, anything's possible. But Kemba just really shores up that backcourt. And, you know, the Knicks could be in striking of 50 wins next season. Super bold take, I know, especially coming from someone who isn't a Knicks fan. But I like their team a lot, dude. I really do like what the new Knicks regime has come in and done this offseason. They didn't do a lot, but they also didn't do a little. Now, Chris Paul re-signing with Phoenix was also super surprising, at least to me. Maybe I was just fucking blind, but I thought there was no way that Chris Paul passes up $44 million. But the only way you pass up $44 million is if you get $120 million, which is what Chris Paul did. But yeah, this is kind of all over the place, and rightfully so. As always, every offseason, there are more surprising moves than there are expected moves. I guess, like, the way I look at it, the less reporting that a potential deal has, the more likely it is to fall through. So we're going to scroll down. Why are so few teams tanking right now? This is a fucking super interesting... This is odd. Flattened draft lottery odds. As we know, the NBA decreased the percentages of the top lottery teams to make it more egalitarian. So that way, tanking doesn't really offer anything. Where it's like, if you're the first over, you have, I think it's like, if you're the first overall, if you're projected to be the first overall pick and you have the greatest odds, you're still, I don't even know how to explain it. Again, this is a draft guy. This is a non-draft guy talking about draft shit. I don't really think there is. Let's start this over. Why are so few teams tanking right now? Flattened draft lottery odds. 3 votes. Recent playoff success by smaller market teams. 3 votes. The advent of the play-in tournament. A lack of turnover in the front offices. Both of those have 2 votes. I think that my answer to this, the NBA is too talented for teams to be outwardly tanking. I mean, if you look at the worst teams in the league, look at teams like Minnesota, who have Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell. Look at a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers, who has Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. Those are 2 teams right off the bat. Oh, we could even look at the Kings. Historically, the fucking laughingstock of the NBA when it comes to how poorly teams can be ran. De'Aaron Fox, Bogdan Bogdanovic, or they had Bogdan Bogdanovic, I should say. Marvin Bagley. Like, every team has quality players. Like, up until recently, the only team that didn't have quality players were the Detroit Pistons. And then they get the number one pick in the draft. They draft Cade Cunningham, and now they have a potential star point guard on their roster. It's just too difficult to tank because the players and the teams are, well, because the players are too talented. It's like they, by virtue of just existing, prevent their teams from tanking. But this was a fucking question I was not expecting to see. And this is very clearly not the NBA sponsored one, because the NBA would never, they would not fucking ask about tanking, dude. Who's going to win the Eastern Who's going to win each conference and the NBA title? In the East, Brooklyn has 7 votes. Milwaukee has 2 votes. Miami has 1 vote. Notably, Boston is not up here. Maybe we're seeing a shift in Boston no longer being a top team in the East. But out West, significantly more parity. I mean, by one fucking team. We have the Lakers with 5 votes, the Golden State Warriors with 2, the Utah Jazz, and the Denver Nuggets. Phoenix, not on here. Very interesting. Very interesting to see the reigning Western Conference champion not make an appearance on here. I'm not so sure what that means. Maybe folks are just not confident in the Suns, despite the fact that they are pretty much bringing back almost their entire team. Booker's there. CP3's there. Cameron Payne is coming back. Mikal Bridges is still there. Cameron Johnson is still there. Jay Crowder is still there. Very odd. The Warriors. I know that Klay coming back is a huge factor in the Warriors being perceived as an elite team again. Because again, Steph, Dre, Wiggins might trade for Ben Simmons. Potentially, I don't know. And then you add Klay Thompson back into there. Even though he's coming off a serious lower extremity injury, still, he can camp out in the corner, shoot like 45% from 3, call it a day. Utah. People are, again, super confident in the Utah Jazz. I cannot say that I am in that camp. Definitely not. What the fuck's going on with the little baby hair? God. I'm not confident in the Utah Jazz at all. I do have confidence in the Denver Nuggets, who did get 1 vote. Of course, they had a very disappointing end to the season. Losing Jamal Murray had a lot to do with it. It was pretty much Nikola Jokic carrying a team that was at a severe disadvantage. There's no other way to put it. That team was built to complement Jokic and Murray. And losing Murray, it really showed that there was nothing that they were going to be able to do to advance beyond the second round. And here, finals champs, Brooklyn with 6 votes, the Lakers with 2, and Milwaukee and Miami both tied with 1. James Harden said it best a couple weeks ago. At full strength, I don't think there's anyone in the NBA who can beat us. I, too, feel that at full strength, there is no other team in the NBA who can beat the Brooklyn Nets. And that's even despite them losing Jeff Green, who was integral to their game plan last year. But they were able to re-sign Bruce Brown. They were able to re-sign Blake Griffin. Of course, they extend Kevin Durant. There is speculation that James Harden and Kyrie will come to extensions at some point before the beginning of the season. Those reports haven't really been substantiated, and they're kind of old at this point. So maybe Sean Marks is just working on the weekend as usual, trying to facilitate some sort of deal. But even if that's not the case, as long as Brooklyn's healthy, they're the best team in the NBA. They are the most talented team in the NBA. Kevin Durant almost willed them to an Eastern Conference Finals against a significantly more loaded Bucks team. And that was, again, with James Harden on one leg and with no Kyrie Irving. Again, it's just the injuries, really, that are going to stop Brooklyn from really turning into a potential dynasty. I'll say it. At this point, they are their own worst enemy. They will be more responsible for their lack of success than any other team in the NBA. Is this the end of the list? That is. Wow. Okay. An Eastern Conference executive just said the exact same thing that I said, more or less. Quote, the only thing that can stop them is themselves. That's how it is, dude. That is really how it is. What a fucking interesting survey. I'm anticipating the NBA coming out with theirs probably at some point in September, mid-September. I think, I don't know. See, the schedule came out and I just didn't fucking pay attention to it because I am horrible at my job at keeping abreast of all of the ongoings around the NBA, but I do look forward to seeing the NBA-sponsored GM survey, just because there will be more representation amongst all the questions, and they do tend to ask I don't want to say better questions, but, you know, we get to really see what the GMs think, I guess. I don't know. As weird as that is to say, I feel like there was nothing else that I immediately wanted to talk about. Nothing has really happened over the last couple of days. There have been some extensions, a couple of extensions. Robert Williams signed a couple-year extension. Josh Richardson is linking up with, he's re-signing with the Celtics again, I think, just for that one season. I think I was able to talk about the schedule or the Christmas Day schedule last week, so I'm not going to rehash that. There was this one thing I saw. Hold on. Oh, you guys know how much I love reacting to listicles, list-centric content where a writer opines for a particular publication, and I love them. I love them. I love these opinions because they are never right, and that's no disrespect to anyone who has ever penned an article like this, because I'm sure I've penned an article like this back in my past life, but they're never right in the sense that no one will ever be pleased by them. And by virtue of this type of content, it's almost always going to garner impressions because people will never agree on it. No one gives a fuck when everybody agrees on something. That's why this topic of LeBron not being the best player in the NBA was so widely talked about, because there was a lot of divisiveness in it. Like, look, as I mentioned, LeBron's been the best player in the NBA for the past fucking decade. Like, so this one is from Sports Illustrated, and it's talking about report cards for every team in the Western Conference, how their off seasons went. Starting off, this is in alphabetical order, I think. I don't know my alphabet. I'm a fucking dumb idiot. Okay, it is in alphabetical order. So I'm just going to quickly peruse this. Dallas, B-. I don't know how. How? This should have been not a B-. I'm already upset at this article. Give Dallas a C, because they really didn't do anything of value here. They did add Reggie Bullock, which this author, who's the author of this article, by the way? Michael Pena? Okay, so he mentions how they add Reggie Bullock and Sterling Brown, but how they also, quote, could have done better. They also could have been a lot worse. Jason Kidd in it head coach is a total wild card, which I agree. As we know, Jason Kidd is a bona fide asshole. Not sure what that's going to be like in the locker room, but I think Dallas had a very just unfortunate offseason because they didn't really improve in any way. Like, I was really hoping that they just surprised everyone and made a run at Kawhi Leonard and potentially even brought him in, but unfortunately that was not the case. It was not the case. Kawhi Leonard re-signed with the Clippers, Denver Nuggets, B. I don't even know why I'm looking at this at this point. It's just outrage. So far, wait, hold on. The Lakers, who had objectively a better offseason than probably anybody else, not named the Clippers in the Western Conference, got a C-. What? How? How did the Lakers get a C-, despite trading for Russell Westbrook? On day one of the postseason, this team won't look exactly as it does today. The buyout market is always their friend, but it's also not a great sign when you're a championship contender that doesn't have obvious options to form a closing five. Seriously, LeBron, Davis, then what? If we pencil in Westbrook, who are the other two players who can impact winning on both ends? Kent Bazemore and Marc Gasol? Talen Horton-Tucker and Ariza? I think that that's kind of irrelevant because few teams in the NBA know who their closing five is at this point. Like, the Nets obviously do, and they don't even know who their closing five is. They have a handful of guys who they can pick to surround Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. Like, is it Joe Harris? Is it fucking Joe Harris and Patty Mills? Is it Bruce Brown and Blake Griffin? It's fluid, but at the end of the day, it matters significantly less when you have somebody like LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think the Lakers had a fantastic offseason, but a C-minus, dude, a C-minus for a team that acquired an all-star player and also did a decent enough job to fill the rest of the roster with competent players. A C-minus is out of pocket. I'm thinking like a B, maybe a B-plus, potentially. But that's just way off base. Especially like, let's go to the Rockets, for example. The Rockets. Who did they sign? Not even a calendar year after they were forced to trade Harden. The Rockets drafted Jalen Green and plucked three other high upside, potentially harmonious 19-year-olds in Josh Christopher, Alperen Sengun. I'm sorry, I'm totally butchering that name. And Usman Garuba, the youngest player ever to start a game for Real Madrid. Okay. They can all conceivably play significant roles in what could be a shorter rebuild than it once appeared. Signing Daniel Theis to a four-year, $36 million deal was smart. He's a serviceable big who protects the rim, yada, yada. Christian Wood is also there. It's unclear about John Wall and his buyout. From Houston's perspective, there's zero pressure here. Okay, but I don't think... I mean, I guess a B is okay, but... That's, again, on the same grounds that the Lakers kind of did the same thing to their own situation. Like, the Rockets drafted three potentially harmonious 19-year-olds to go along with Jalen Green. When you're banking on potential, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot. As someone who's witnessed the Brooklyn Nets rebuild, banking on potential is a very dangerous game to play, because you can't just go through the draft to rebuild. You have to make trades. You have to work the free agency market. You have to facilitate deals for bad contracts as long as you can extract an asset out of that. Now, I'm not saying that the Houston Rockets swung and missed by drafting with Jalen Green. I mean, fantastic player. Daniel Theis is a great player as well, but their offseason was kind of average. Like, if we're basing C, if we're taking the C grade as an average, which I know that's not really how it works because grading is such a fucking interesting concept. If C is the average, then yes, the Houston Rockets had a pretty average draft. There's nothing wrong with having a C or a C plus. Like, there's nothing wrong with just having an okay offseason. But to say the Lakers, again, this is me looking at it my way. I don't know the thought process that went into this grade, but to say the Lakers had a worse offseason than the Houston Rockets is just not correct. I don't want to say it's incorrect. I would tend to disagree with that opinion because, as I already mentioned, like, I know Russell Westbrook doesn't fit the Lakers the best, but they also didn't just stop after trading for him. They patched their holes. Like, I don't understand why you would leave, for example, Kendrick Nunn out of this when Kendrick Nunn can potentially close games. Actually, he doesn't. Decided to collect a bunch of one-dimensional thieves who won't be able to stay on the floor in most playoff series. Carmelo Anthony, Wayne Ellington, Malik Monk, and maybe even Kendrick Nunn. What are you basing that off of? Granted, I know Carmelo Anthony is probably not going to see heavy minutes in the postseason, and that's fine. But he might be able to. We don't know. Carmelo Anthony is an all-time great, has led playoff teams in the past. He could provide some serious value for Brooklyn, for the Lakers in the right context. Obviously, it's one where there will have to be more defensive-minded players on there. I do agree that these players are, in fact, one-dimensional, but it's okay for your role players to be one-dimensional, and that's because they fill a certain role. Kendrick Nunn being a spark plug off the bench is okay as his one dimension. Wayne Ellington being a floor spacer is okay as his one dimension. If you want to argue that the Lakers didn't sign enough defensive-minded individuals, then, you know, I would tend to agree with you. Dwight Howard, yeah, I'm kind of not sold on Dwight Howard, to be honest. Trevor Ariza still might be able to play decent defense in the postseason, but I don't know. It remains to be seen. Like this just seems very anti-Laker. Like, that's kind of upsetting to me. It doesn't seem that fair to the Lakers front office. Like, this, yeah, I don't know. This is kind of sus. What'd the Grizzlies get? The Grizzlies got a C+. What? How? Like, this is... Okay. Now, again. In the context that the C grade is an average offseason, Memphis being slightly above average or even average, like, didn't get much better, also didn't get significantly worse, I would agree with that. So I'm going to give this little paragraph the benefit of the doubt, because Memphis really did not have a fantastic offseason. They traded for Eric Bledsoe and then traded Eric Bledsoe to Los Angeles for Rondo and Pat Bev. Like, it's really, yeah, Memphis wasn't trying to, I don't think Memphis was trying to do anything crazy. They did fleece the fuck out of the Pelicans, and I thought they were going to try to make a play for Bradley Beal with the 10th overall pick, but that did not translate. Now, this New Orleans Pelicans grade, D+. This is too high. This is too generous. I just got done talking about how Mr. Pina was too harsh on the Lakers. He wasn't harsh enough on the Pelicans. You should have given the fucking Pelicans a W for withdrawal, because that's what they did in regards to any sort of progress. They withdrew from making progress this offseason. Like, let's just read this. It's been a misadventurous summer for the team that employs Zion Williamson, a player who could/should already be an MVP candidate, if not for the consistently odd personnel moves being made around him. Bledsoe and Adams, goodbye. Wait, no, let's try that again. Bledsoe and Adams, goodbye. Because we want to open up cap space to try to sign a star point guard and need to slide 7 spots down in the draft to do so. Devontae Graham, welcome aboard for the cost of a draft pick. Lonzo Ball, goodbye. Well, it says sayonara for no reason. Like, again, I'm reading this. Fuck yeah, dude. Let's slander the Pelicans tremendously. Tomas Satoransky was one of the most underrated role players in the league last year, but New Orleans would have been better off just keeping Ball, re-signing Josh Hart, as they did, admittedly, to a solid contract, adding the 10th pick instead of the 17th, although Trey Murphy III should fit nicely on another roster that sorely needs players who can shoot, and not worry just yet about clearing up cap space for an unlikely run at a 35-year-old point guard who eventually took less money to live in Miami. The concept of patience should be the Pelicans' best friend given how young their core pieces are, coupled with the number of draft picks they possess. Instead, it's become their worst enemy. If they struggle next season and can't get Williamson to take a max extension, it'll be harder to think of a more catastrophic 3-year stretch in NBA history. Again, as someone who lived through one of the worst fucking trades ever, when Billy King essentially traded everybody for Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, not even Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, the shells of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, as well as Gerald Wallace, trading away picks that turned into guys like Damian Lillard, Draymond Green, Jaylen Brown. I don't think the Pelicans' run will be that bad, but it's mainly because at this point they've already traded the assets away for, you know, some players who are decent, admittedly. Devontae Graham is a decent player. Like, they didn't totally fuck it up. Well, they did, but they, again, didn't get, like, comically bad players in return, or players who were just well past their prime and had no point in being traded for what they got traded for. It's definitely up there, though. Do not get me wrong. The Pelicans fucked up super hard, and at this point, if I'm Zion, I'm looking at the Pelicans, and I'm like, there really is, at this point, no future in here for me. Like, if they wanted to start Zion to the Knicks prematurely, and, you know, they already have to a certain degree, let's fucking start it right now. I will bang the drums of Zion to New York, because the Pelicans, at this point, it's looking like they don't deserve him. What the fuck? Oh my God, there's so much to read here. So OKC, C+? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Phoenix got a B. Okay. I totally agree with that. The only blemish on the Phoenix Suns offseason is the amount of money they gave to Chris Paul. That's it. And it's not even like, it's just the fact that Chris Paul is going to be like 40 when his deal's over, and he's going to be earning like $60 million at 40 years old. That's the only blemish, dude. That's it. Phoenix, all told, had a respectable offseason. Now, Portland, D+. Okay, yes. Portland did not do dick and balls this offseason. What did they do? This grade is 1,000% less relevant than whatever Damian Lillard thinks it should be. And publicly, he hasn't exactly been enthusiastic about everything he's seen. Yeah. If Dame is just Zion from the future, and also a little bit shorter and significantly less thick, the Trailblazers are not going anywhere at this point. And it sucks. It really does suck for somebody like Damian Lillard, who has been so loyal and so productive and just so entertaining and so outwardly loving towards the Portland organization and also Portland as a city. For him to, he's just living in purgatory. He's living in basketball purgatory at this point. The team will not get better unless he or CJ is traded. And I don't think Portland gets that much better if they trade Dame. They would have to trade CJ because he is the lesser of the two players. Granted, not by much, but he is less talented than Dame. And he's still good enough to fetch a decent return. But what Portland is doing, man, they're just not doing it. They're doing the most at doing the least. And it's a damn shame. Sacramento, I don't know if fucking Sacramento did anything notable. I mean, they re-signed Rashawn Holmes, but I mean, at some point, Sacramento was just going to have to, like, just trade him. Just, like, literally start over. Metaphorically burn the franchise to the ground. Release these players from their shackles. Release them from their misery. Send them to teams that will actually benefit from their services. Because, again, I don't know what's going on in Sacramento. I don't even want to talk about it because they make me want to throw up. San Antonio, grade B. Utah, got an A. Dead? What the fuck? Okay, wow. Maybe I did underestimate the Jazz. They nabbed Rudy Gay and helped the Warriors stay. Okay, taking Eric Pascal. Okay. Okay, maybe I did underestimate Utah a little bit. But their lack of star power kind of scares me. And I'm going to sneeze. Hold on. My God. Pardon me. I still think Utah's lack of... Oh, my God. Horrible. I still think Utah's lack of having a super duper star hampers them. It does. And that's no disrespect to Donovan Mitchell. He very well could transcend. If Donovan Mitchell reaches a Damian Lillard type of ceiling, I think Utah becomes a legitimate contender because they are kind of like the opposite of Portland, where Portland has a super duper star in Damian Lillard. But the supporting cast is very lackluster. Like, CJ McCollum is a decent player. Norman Powell is a decent player. But outside of that, they don't really come together that well. Whereas Utah is the exact opposite. They don't have a super-duper star, although Donovan Mitchell is definitely a star, bordering on superstar. They have Rudy Gay, who's an all-star caliber player. They have Joe Ingles. They have Mike Conley. They have Bojan Bogdanovic. They now have Eric Pascal. They have a decent, I'm trying to think of the word, they have a decent conglomerate of role players, and they just need Donovan Mitchell to take another leap. That's it. If Donovan Mitchell can take another small leap and be on that border of superstar and super duper star, the Jazz's outlook changes drastically. And that is a world that I would be here for. Now, there was something else I saw. This was from Deadspin. The title of this article is... Oh, fuck, man. This is so bad. Let's pick apart this list of the NBA's 22 best point guards. Okay, so this is a reaction to a ranking by HoopsHype.com where they ranked the top 22 point guards in the NBA. So I am reacting to a reaction of a ranking. It's the top 22 point guards to represent the upcoming season. Before we dive in, there are a couple of notable names not on this list. Jamal Murray was left off the list, so that's understandable because of his injury. I totally fucked that up. Jamal Murray was left off the list because of his torn ACL, which both Deadspin and I understand is okay. The second glaring omission from this list is Luka Doncic. Not only is he not included in this list, but his name doesn't even appear on the page once. No explanation on why he isn't on the list or anything. If you're calling him a small forward, okay, but he is the point guard in Dallas. See, this is why I have a simultaneous just love and disdain for positional rankings in the modern NBA, because the modern NBA is so positionless. It's impossible to rank because there are only like a handful of actual guys who play exclusively one position, as we will see in this list going forward. Look at Kevin Durant. Look at James Harden, who also isn't on this list. Kevin Durant plays multiple positions. Kevin Durant plays multiple positions and has different tendencies at each position. James Harden plays multiple positions and has different tendencies at each position. The same is said for Giannis. The same case can be made for LeBron. The same can be made for Kawhi. Do you see how fucking impossible it is? Even someone like Draymond Green, who can play three different positions, cannot be tied into any one actual ranking because he belongs in three. He belongs in three different rankings, and he splits his time among three different positions. It's just increasingly hard. So as my voice begins to wear off, we're starting off with the elite. We got Steph, Dame, Kyrie at 1, 2, and 3, respectively. This, of course, is... I do not see anybody in the NBA challenging these three guys as the three best at their position. For one, they're very... Well, I don't even... See, this is also where it gets kind of weird because these guys are... They play like undersized shooting guards where their first inclination is to score. Although they average 5, 6, 7, sometimes near 8 assists, they are getting the ball wanting to get buckets. They play like shooting guards, but they're also so exceptionally skilled all around that their natural position is point guard, but I feel their tendencies lean toward shooting guard. Regardless, these guys are very clearly the best at the point guard position, regardless of whether you want to classify them as shooting guard or point guard. Although people don't really look at these guys as shooting guards, as actual shooting guards, again, mainly because of the size. But this is where the list gets controversial. And I'm saying this because that's what is said in the actual article. It says verbatim, number four is where the list begins to get a little controversial. For some, it may be, for some, it may not be, but I must question it. You have Chris Paul, we have Trae Young and Chris Paul at number four and number five. This is fine. This is fine. This author is also bringing up how Young's high ranking on this list must be partly due to his playoff run. That's fucking wrong, dude. Let's go to what Trae Young did in the regular season. Okay, I'm on basketballreference.com. I'm looking at Trae Young. This guy averaged, are you ready for this? 25.3 points and 9.4 assists during the regular season while shooting less than 35% from three. He could have averaged more points if he had replicated his efficiency from the year before. What did Trae Young do in the postseason? Okay, so he averaged about 29 points and 9.5 assists. That's great, dude. But No, Trae Young is put above Chris Paul on this list because he outplayed Chris Paul throughout the regular season. Statistically, he was better than Chris Paul, at least offensively. Now, the intangibles that Chris Paul brings to the table are a different conversation. Chris Paul, of course, embodies the traditional point guard position better than anyone else on this list. I don't care who it is. Chris Paul is the best true point guard on this list, but he has managed to age pretty well by changing his tendencies a little bit. Now, Chris Paul has always had the ability to be the number one guy because he was, when he was with the Pelicans, he was a guy who would go out and get 20, 22 points a night because he needed to, but he was still a walking double-double at that point. But I'm still hung up on the fact that this paragraph says another player who had a great playoff run and played a huge part in his team advancing is Reggie Jackson of the Los Angeles Clippers. When Kawhi Leonard went down in the second round against the Jazz, Jackson stepped up big, and without him, the Clippers don't get past the Jazz. It's those games where Paul George couldn't hit the shot from a boat or couldn't hit the ocean from a boat. Jackson stepped up and carried the scoring load in those moments. That's awesome, dude. Really, that's fucking great. But you're going to just blatantly ignore the fact that Trae Young nearly tripled Reggie Jackson's production in the regular season. Reggie Jackson barely averaged 10 points a night. 10.7. He averaged 3.1 assists. Trae Young tripled Reggie Jackson's production. He nearly doubled Reggie Jackson. Well, not nearly doubled. He 1.5 times Reggie Jackson's production in the postseason. Jackson averaged 18 points and 3 assists. This is simply just like, this is anti-Trae Young propaganda. That's what this is, man. This is Trae Young. This is, dude, I can't even fucking believe what I'm reading. This is anti-Trae Young agitative propaganda. This is like the fucking, this is like when old people get all upset about critical race theory, despite them having no understanding of what critical race theory is. You're watching Reggie Jackson put up a bunch of points against the Utah Jazz. And don't get me wrong, dude. Reggie Jackson was fantastic in the playoffs. But you're also just totally looking past the fact that Trae Young brought the Atlanta Hawks. I'm taking a super long pause for the dramatic. But you are understating how Trae Young took the Atlanta Hawks to an Eastern Conference semifinal. He beat the Philadelphia 76ers, the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference. He beat the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And let's take a look at his numbers for that series. Okay, he shot less than 40% from the field, but he averaged 29 points and 11 assists. What the, like, are you okay? Are you, author of this article, Chris, are you okay? Why are you putting Reggie Jackson anywhere near Trae Young? There is, dude, don't get me wrong. Reggie Jackson does not belong on this list. He does not belong in a paragraph talking about Trae Young because Trae Young is literally playing four-dimensional chess while Reggie Jackson is playing with Hot Wheels. They're not playing the same game. Trae Young is worlds ahead of Reggie Jackson, and he deserves to be at number four on this list. I'm so fucking amazed by this. Chris Paul at number five is okay. I'm not upset with this at all. I think that Trae Young and Chris Paul deserve to be at number four and number five. Fucking shoot me. The middle of the road, we got John Morant, Drew Holiday, De'Aaron Fox, Ben Simmons, Russell Westbrook, LaMelo Ball, and Mike Conley. That is 6 through 12. And then the falling back, we got Fred VanVleet, Malcolm Brogdon, Lonzo Ball. Dropping off, Kyle Lowry, D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie. Pulling up the rear, Kemba Walker, Terry Rozier, Derrick Rose, DeJounte Murray. I'm not even going to entertain these rankings really beyond number 12 because these guys aren't really shaking up the league like that. All of these guys, for the most part, are either complementary players on good teams or the best player on a bad team. And that's not to shit on their talent, because you have a lot of talented players on this list. I mean, this group right here, 13 through 15, Fred VanVleet, Malcolm Brogdon, and Lonzo Ball, are all starting caliber point guards, but they're not the best players on their team. And I don't think at any point in their careers will they be the best players on their teams. So I really just want to, I don't even know if I want to dissect like this little part right here, 6 through 12, Ja, Drew, Fox, Ben Simmons, Westbrook. Like, I think that Ja Morant is the best player in this group by a hair. Literally a hair. And that's only because Drew Holiday is playing less of a role offensively in Milwaukee. I think in terms of talent, Drew Holiday should be ahead of Ja Morant. He's as good of a playmaker as Ja is. Reliable enough scorer, but he is probably the best defensive point guard on this list. It's either him or Ben Simmons. I think that deserves a little bit of a higher placement. But other than that, like, I'm just still fucking hung up on this person mentioning Reggie Jackson. And then, like, hold on. How many times did they mention Reggie Jackson? They mentioned Reggie Jackson. Dude. So, wait a minute. Lonzo Ball made the list. And Reggie Jackson couldn't make it at all? I can't get with that. Lonzo had a solid year, but it didn't contribute to winning much of anything in New Orleans. Even if you just take Jackson's playoff run, that's enough for me to rank him over Lonzo. So you're going to rank Reggie Jackson over D'Angelo Russell, DeJounte Murray, who I feel is a better player than Reggie Jackson. Even Scary Terry put up better numbers than Reggie Jackson. I don't understand. Like, is Reggie Jackson like his journalist burner account or something? Lonzo Ball, how are you not seeing that Lonzo Ball is a superior player to Reggie Jackson? Lonzo Ball, who is not a scorer, averaged more points than Reggie Jackson did this past season. And I think he fucking shot better from the field than he did too. Reggie Jackson averaged all round up to 11 points in 23 minutes. Lonzo Ball averaged 14 and a half in 31. Now, obviously, the minutes disparity is a thing, but do you see why Lonzo Ball would play more minutes than Reggie Jackson? 14 and a half points, almost 5 rebounds, a little bit less than 6 assists, shot 38% from 3. Dude, Reggie Jackson does not deserve to be on this list, my guy. I know you're trying, but yeah. Lonzo Ball made the list because he is a better player than Reggie Jackson. As a matter of fact, every player on this list is a better player than Reggie Jackson. And I'm not trying to shit on Reggie Jackson, because I think, obviously, in the right system, he can be a fine player. He established that in the postseason. But his contributions in the regular season did not contribute much to the Clippers winning. It was mostly Kawhi and it was mostly Paul George. Sorry, that's just how it is when you have two stars on your team. In the postseason, it's a different story. But I'm not so sure that this list is going off of what these players did for their teams in the playoffs. I think it's going off of their individual talents. Because Damian Lillard and Stephen Curry are the two best players on the list. And guess what, dude? They really did not contribute much to their teams in the postseason. But that doesn't matter, because they are very clearly the two best point guards, or two of the three best point guards in the NBA. So I think that this is just off base, dude. I'm really happy I did check this out, because I got a fucking great clip. I got a great piece of content off of fucking defending Trae Young, because that's just ridiculous, dude. I'm sorry. That was such bullshit to just try to shoehorn Reggie Jackson and try to fucking make the case. I have to bookmark this so I can put it in the video. I have to. This is fucking amazing. Dude, I can't believe that this person tried to shoehorn Reggie Jackson in like that and thought nobody would notice. God, I love everything. I love everything about the internet. Oh, fuck, dude. I think I gotta go after that. I'm not sure I can continue. I'm incapacitated after that. Also, there's really like nothing else going on. I don't want to look at any more fucking lists, dude. Hold on. Kevin Garnett crops Ray Allen out of 2011 Celtics photo in Instagram story post. Holy shit, dude. NBA player pettiness is unrivaled. I love it. I love how petty everybody in the NBA is. It makes me so happy. Hold on, I gotta retweet this. I didn't see this, dude. This is fucking hilarious. This is 2 days old. Oh my god, I love it. I love it. So it's just Rondo, Paul Pierce, and KG. There's no Ray Allen. I wonder what like the feud is about. I got Ray Allen's biography on Audible. I have to listen to it. I have to see if he talks about it because it's a couple of years old at this point. So I don't know like how updated it is, but man, this feud is fucking ridiculous. Okay, now seriously, I'm going to head out. I have to go. I have to go work out. As always, thank you guys so, so much for coming. Hang out with me. As always, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a like, leave a fucking rating, subscribe, leave a review. It helps me out tremendously. Also, if you enjoyed this, go ahead and tell a friend about it. Word of mouth advertising is superior to all other forms. Everything else that I'm associated with is down in the description below. And with that said, thank you guys again, and I will catch y'all in the next one.